Hello and welcome to the Dancecast, where I explore dance as an art form, traveling to non-traditional places and with non-traditional doers. I'm your host and my name is Silva Lakkonen. Welcome to Dancecast episode 42. In this episode, I talk to Mikaela Knox. She is a colleague that I met at the regional convening for the future of physically integrated dance in the US 3 years back in New Mexico. And immediately I felt her kindness and positivity, and I wanted to know more about her work. She received her BA in dance from Dickinson College and her MA in educational leadership from the University of New Mexico. She has trained and taught with the National Dance Institute of New Mexico from 2003 to 2012. And during this time, she taught and directed dance outreach programs to thousands of children across New Mexico. In 2013, Mikaela moved with her family to Durango, Colorado, where she formed the original Spark program. And most recently, she has returned to Maine with her family to establish and grow an inclusive dance program in her home state. Over the course of her career, she has worked with students with disabilities in both classroom and studio settings. She recognized that traditional approaches to dance education were not the most effective when trying to serve all students equally. She felt compelled to create a dance program that could meet the needs of all individuals more successfully. While researching, she discovered Danceability International, which is an organization that has developed a methodology for teaching dance to people with and without disabilities. This method has been growing rapidly for 30 years and is currently taught in over 40 countries. She is a certified Danceability instructor, and she now uses this method in all of her classes. She has a deep love and commitment to the individual she works with. She considers it her life mission to support her students in discovering and growing their own artistic expression through dance. In her classes, there are no wrong choices, infinite ways to have a success. She's a wonderful, sparky, bubbly person, and I hope you all enjoy this episode. Mikaela, welcome to Dancecast.
Thank you. Yes.
We haven't recorded before, but we have spoken about and spoken together about it for several times.
Yes, I'm glad we could finally make it happen today. Awesome.
So tell me a little bit about, I'm very curious to see how people end up into the dance world in the first place. So where did your dance enthusiasm start? How did you start in the dance world?
Yeah, so for me, you know, I began dancing when I was a little girl. I think that even, you know, as a toddler or 4 or 5 year old, I was just one of those kids that loved to express myself with my body. I loved to dance to music. It was the most natural way for me to express myself, you know, and for me that meant, you know, I could go into my room, I could blast the Whitney Houston and Debbie Gibson and just move. That was a way that I wanted to communicate and express myself. It had nothing to do with words. It just had to do with movement. And so I always felt like that was the way that I was wired, to move. It was my greatest love and from a young age. And I grew up dancing and performing in my communities here in Maine, and there was a great support for the performing arts on the coast of Maine during the 80s and 90s. We had a really great community here, a number of supportive dance studios and great teachers. And for me, I wanted to try it all. You know, I wanted to try tap, I wanted to try ballet, I wanted to try hip hop and jazz and, you know, musical theater. I wanted to experience all of it. And I just loved it. I loved dancing on my own. I loved dancing with my friends. I loved, you know, dancing with my teachers. It was always my greatest hobby. No one ever had to tell me to practice. You know, if you gave me a free afternoon, I would just lock myself in my room and dance all afternoon.
That's so awesome. Me
from ages 4 to probably, you know, 10 or something. But yeah, that's kind of how it began. It's just finding that love and having some, you know, great teachers from a young age that inspired my natural instincts to move in my own way.
Did you go to college? Did you do some formal training ever?
Absolutely. So, you know, my young life here, I studied ballet and started, you know, pretty much exclusively ballet and musical theater and jazz and all that until maybe I was 15 or 16. That's when I really started focusing more on contemporary dance. And that's what I studied in college. I was a dance major. I went to Dickinson College, which is in southern Pennsylvania. And they had a wonderful dance theater program there. What I loved about it is right from the very first year, there were opportunities for choreograph. And so right away, they encouraged students to start creating their own. For me, was a really big part of what I wanted to do. And
so it was like cultivating their own artistic voice in the field as well.
Yes. Yep, right off the bat. Yeah. You know, even to back up a little bit, you know, for me in the last few years of high school, when I really realized that I wanted to go on and focus on dance and dance education, I was already moving into a realm where really looking at dance as a medium to create new art, you know, even as a young 16, 17, I was not so interested in what had already been done. I was looking at it, for example, when I was a senior in high school, I had a final project and I said, I'm going to choreograph a dance where I only use the muscles in my face. I'm going to be completely still and I'm going to dance with only my face. Because I thought, and it's so funny looking back that I've ended up where I am now, but as an 18-year-old, I thought, this is a really interesting challenge. How could I express and create movement just by using my mouth and my nose and my eyebrows and my eyes and put it to music? And so this was my senior project here in Maine that I did, formed. And so I think that I was already kind of saying, let's see what we can do that hasn't been done yet. You know, what's could we do that's brand new still in the world of dance, you know, because I was starting to realize that dance had this bigger, more broad definition, all of the possibilities that could exist and still be dance by the definition I was finding for myself of what dance could be. I was already starting to explore that and wanting to expand that. And so even at that age, when I arrived at college, there were plenty of other folks in my program who were, you know, pretty serious dancers and had, you know, contemporary dance backgrounds. But right away, I wasn't as interested in choreographing work for dancers. But, you know, people who identified clearly that that was, you know, their identity, they were dancers. I was more interested in working with the people who had never danced before. Because right off the bat, I love looking at human movement. People have never been to a dance class before. Each have, they have a different way of moving. We who are dancers who have performed for many, many years, you know, in the dance company I was with in Colorado, we would say that like, we kind of go into dancer mode when we get on the stage, you know, and it changes our posture and we get very tall and we extend our limbs and we go into this concept. And that's beautiful. And often there's a lot of uniformity. You see a lot of consistencies. But I was really fascinated in working with people who had never been in a dance class. And so I ended up in college, kind of they would, whenever there was a beginner in the class, in the program, they'd say, oh, let's send them to Michaela. Let's have them, you know, she'll create some interesting choreography with people who don't identify as dancers. So that from the beginning of my career was a real focus of my interest to work with beginners, work with people who have never identified as dancers before, and help them discover their own unique way of expressing with their body, by, you know, creating an atmosphere where those impulses and instincts were encouraged and applauded, and we could discover it together. Sorry, I got a little bit off topic there, but yeah.
That's awesome. How did you found a danceability then? When did that come into your life?
Yeah, so...
Because I know that you worked with mixed ability population before you got certified. So somehow you then had the opportunity to work with in this field, or how did that happen?
Right. So I'll give you a little bit more of the background of what happened. So after college, I started working with the National Dance Institute. So that was my connection to New Mexico. And so, right. So NDI is an, you know, incredible organization that started in New York City, then, maybe 20 years ago, began its own program out in New Mexico. And so when I was, you know, 22, fresh out of college, instead of pursuing a performing career, I wanted to go into dance education. I wanted to teach, and I knew that at a very young age. And so they offered a great opportunity to train me as a teacher in their method. And so for a number of years, for 5 years intensively, I worked and trained with their organization. I ended up, you know, directing some of their residency programs and taught all over the state, really. We traveled a lot. And the, you know, the NDI method is really spectacular in that it's rooted in confidence building is a big piece of it. You know, it would be in the schools, reaching out to children who would otherwise never have an opportunity to have a dance class. They get to have it in school. And the pedagogy of NDI is incredible in that it children who've never had a dance class before maybe say, oh, dance isn't for me, dance isn't my thing. It's approached by the NDI teachers, it's presented in a way that's these chapters. I mean, we call them chapters. So it's 8 counts of movement, and it's repetitive, it's easy, it's based in pedestrian movement, and how to win, you know. So if it's reaching your arms for 8 counts in a chapter, any child can say, oh, I just did a dance move, you know, okay, maybe, you know, maybe I am a dancer, maybe I can do this. And it's very approachable. And so anyway, that chapter of my life was wonderful, and that I learned to effective manage a large classroom, often with people who know all sorts of different behaviors and different kind of kids. So that was super. And what I kind of arrived at the end of that, you know, my time with NDI, is that I was looking to kind of return to more contemporary approach, or I don't know how to say it, not necessarily approach, but I was looking to go back to the world of contemporary dance a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And I was finding myself really interested in exploring methods that were inclusive to people with differences and disabilities. This came to be just from the experience of having students in my classes, you know, in studio settings and school settings all over, who had disabilities, who I just never felt like I could effectively teach before. I just didn't feel like I had the right method, or I felt a little stuck. You know, I would have somebody, you know, necessarily maybe it was somebody who was deaf, or maybe it was somebody who used a walker, or somebody who was nonverbal. And I would have this moment where I desperately wanted it to, you know, to be a positive experience and for them to feel included in the dance community and to, you know, get to perform. But I just didn't have the tools yet, you know. And so it would end up being that inadvertently, you know, I might would make a choice that would leave that person feeling isolated. You know, maybe I would say, oh, okay, well, you sit down over here, or maybe you just do the movement with your arms instead, or, you know, this kind of adapting sometimes that happens, but is not truly inclusive, you know? Yeah. And so I start, you know, I was curious to find, you know, other approaches. And that was when I discovered danceability and the work that Alito has created over the years. And for me, it was just at that point in my career, once I went and trained with Alito, even for the first, you know, 5-day intensive, I just said, this is it. This is what I've been looking for. And there's really been no turning back for me. I just feel a real sense of clarity professionally that the danceability method is.
It's the right tool.
For me, it is absolutely, it'll just the most in alignment with what I believe as a teacher, what I believe about humanity, the way that I want to be connecting with my students, the way that I want to honor my students. I believe in it wholeheartedly. And even in, you know, the 3 years that I've been working with this method, the what I've gotten to witness is it's so transformative. What I've gotten to, what I've had the opportunity to see in my students has been just really, really special. And so I know that, you know, in the opportunity to continue and to reach more people, that's how I want to proceed. So,
Did you start your own program after NDI?
So I left NDI. Yep, absolutely. So I started working with danceability, you know, in 2016 is when I did my, when I first met Alito and discovered the danceability method. And I started building a program in Colorado, which was Spark Dance Program. Yeah. And I did some programming in the schools using the danceability method with children. And also had some adult programming in Colorado and some classes, and that was where it began. And was there for 2 years. And I decided with the family that it was the right time to finally come home to my home state, you know, my home state of Maine, where I'm from. And I felt a pull back here for a long time. Just it feels like where my roots are, where my family is. And I also felt really compelled to build a program here and serve communities that I'm still so connected with. Mm-hmm. A pretty progressive state, actually, in terms of inclusion and of, you know, forward thinking, especially with the arts and disabilities. And so there were some really great opportunities for partnerships with organizations here to try to build danceability work in the communities here. So I decided to just take the leap and move with my family back to Maine. And so far it's been incredible. I mean, gosh, even in, you know, it was just since January that we've started programming, and we've taught in 6 communities. I say we, I've been teaching solo, but I have a board of directors here that's really supportive, and also some amazing interns and volunteer support. And we're finding that by seeking out partnerships with organizations that have similar values in terms of inclusion and independence for people with disabilities, we're able to offer some great programming, and it's been really super so far. It just continues to grow, and people are both, you know, parents of children and adults are contacting me and saying, we're so glad that you're here. There's a need for this, you know, and that is good because it affirms that Maine was the place to be.
So that's incredible. You've been only doing this now in Maine for 6 months.
Yeah, we began. Well, the first 6 months was just a matter of making connections, yeah, you know, and building some strong relationships. And then we've been actively having our programming, yeah, since January is when we began. And so, yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's there's a need. There's a need and there's interest. And I just find this teaching these classes to be, it's really fulfilling for me as a teacher, just to get to as a witness, you know, but get to offer this method and spread Alito's work. It feels it's the move for me.
What is your bigger picture, like if you would just dream for a second, like what kind of a next steps and what kind of an end result you would absolutely in your dream perfect world have?
Yeah, well, there's a couple things. You know, one thing is that I would really love to build a dance company here, to build an inclusive dance company that performs regularly, because I think that performance art is such an incredible vehicle, you know, for working on dance for social change. Not only are we including people who may otherwise be isolated, but also we're bringing performance art to public places where people can learn more about it and get to see it. So having a dance company here is definitely a long-term goal. I would like to ultimately be able to serve areas in Greater New England. So right now we're, you know, we're in the Portland area and mid-coast area, you know, up to central Maine. But ultimately, you know, Boston is a huge city, only 2 hours away.
Yeah.
And there's certainly a huge need there, just the population alone. So we would love to be serving the Boston area ultimately. And, you know, we would love to have a home-based dance studio. Right now, our programming is primarily outreach, you know, just so that we can serve the most people that way. But we would love to have a studio where we can host workshops and bring, you know, people like Alito, like you, people from all over to come and teach for longer stretches would be amazing. And yeah, I think that's enough. As I'm saying it, I'm like, wow, this is a lot of this is a 10-year vision beyond
That's great. Yeah. I love that. That sounds fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you and I spoke a little bit about this, but another thing that interests me is to be able to offer trainings with, you know, to dance studios that are regional here all over, to be able to give some training on how existing dance studio owners have their studios be more inclusive, more effectively inclusive to all children and all people, because I think that's something that's really missing. You know, I so often talk to parents who have a child with a disability who say they don't feel, you know, they don't feel comfortable pursuing, you know, things like dance classes. They wouldn't, you know, felt like there's not a spot for their child and not a place for their child. And I think oftentimes that's a stigma that doesn't need to be there, and it can shift with just a little bit of training from some the teachers. And so that's another goal and vision that I'm hoping that we could offer some support to existing dance studios and how to sort of shift their structure. And I mean, not structure, but give them some training so that they wouldn't have to turn any student away based on a disability.
Yeah. And to start it on the right foot, you know, that I see dance studios who do this, but it's a private practice, and I'm not here to like criticize private practice, but I can see the challenges of like teacher training, and our dance world is still searching the ways of what is dance a disability and how is it gonna come in, or is it gonna come in, is it becoming of its own thing? So it's definitely understandable that the structure in a private studio is not there, but really to help to start the programming in a right sort of foot, because there often I see dance studios having dance classes that are segregated for only for people with disabilities or children with disabilities, but they don't mix with their peers.
Right. Yes. So sometimes it's just as simple as shifting the agenda or the expectation for the class. And so something simple like, so one of, you know, an Alito would say, one of the danceability core values is that no one's ever in isolation, right? So like if you look at a dance class and if they're going to invite and include anyone, so if you have a child who's using a wheelchair, the simple shift is, okay, if this person's here, we're going to always have somebody in a chair.
Yeah.
And even like to make that little shift for the children in that class to have that experience of, we're going to intentionally make sure that no one's ever in isolation. What a gift to that group to have that experience. It's so much more meaningful than any, you know, uniformity of choreography or, you know, any logistical challenge it may. It's so minor when compared to the bigger message that that group of kids is going to get from, in this class, no one's ever on their own.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge, right? And so it's like, there are these little things that we can take from, you know, the danceability method that can be applied in so many settings in the dance world. It does, you know, it doesn't always have to be, this is going to be an exclusively a danceability class. Well, what can we take from the danceability method and apply it? If this child wants to take a tap dance class, you know, and it's going to be a traditional tap technique class, maybe there are things that we can learn.
Yeah, oh my gosh, there's an entire rhythm.
And apply.
Rhythm part to tap dancing, says the one who has never done tap dancing. So,
but yeah, no. Yeah, and it's not to say that every dance class is for everybody. You know,
as
dancers,
absolutely,
we wouldn't put a beginner, a ballet in a point class, you know.
Yes.
And so, but I think that that every studio, someday there will not be an inclusive dance studio. It'll be that all dance studios, you know, will be open
to the standard.
The differences.
Yeah, this is the norm. Yeah, I interviewed Aaron Wheeler Kay from Portland, or Oregon at least. Now I might remember where he's located incorrectly, but you can go and listen to his episode. But he was saying this beautifully. He was like, whatever situation they had made accessible for all has benefited the entire population of the situation. Like, there hasn't been a situation where they made a space or a meeting or a class accessible and it didn't benefit everyone. So I thought that was just really a beautiful way of talking about it.
Yes, absolutely. There is something bigger that happens in those moments.
So you said you got certified about 3 years ago. And
I was certified in 2017, but done some Aikido before then, you know, a few different trainings, but I actually did certification in Lisbon in 2017, yeah.
So you have practiced for a couple of years. Is there something that you noticed that, you know, I'm trying to be here, I'm asking the benefits and the drawbacks. Is there a drawback or is there something that you see that, I think we should think about this a little different in the danceability method? Or is there anything that you can say into that?
Sure. You know, I can speak to that a little. You know, what I'm struggling with right now, which is not so much related to the method itself, but it has to do with wanting more connection, you know, with the danceability, the bigger danceability world. Just because I moved here in Maine, at this point, I'm the only danceability teacher who's actively teaching. There is another teacher here, but I'm the only one in my program. Mm. And so I feel like the worldwide danceability network, I would like to be more connected with on an ongoing basis. So, and I know that's something that the folks in Eugene and Aledo are working towards too, is having more structure with support for people who are starting out at new programs, new dance programs. So that's one thing that I'm craving now, and that I would love to see a shift in moving forward, would just be a deeper connectedness, so that, you know, little things come up that I think, boy, how am I going to navigate this one? You know, and it's just more community ability world.
Oh my gosh, I just got a lovely idea where they should bring the people who have practiced for longer and the new ones together, and then we would share a 1 week and like teach each other and talk about situation. Oh my gosh, that would be so amazing.
Yeah, it would. And, also it takes some responsibility. I think part of it too is for me not isolating myself, reaching out when I have questions, which, sometimes that's just a matter of knowing. I mean, I know there are folks that are there,
Yes.
there are folks like who have had a lot of experience, and just in geographical proximity, I do feel a distance, And so, but in terms of the method, the more that I do it, the more that I learn. And so I'm just, every time I have the opportunity to have a new student and a new class, I'm learning so much from the process of doing it. It's one thing to go and do the training and do the certification, and it's, it's all ideas. And then actually to now have classes where I've gone, things have come up that, maybe Alito said them during the training, but I didn't really know what he meant. And I'm in that moment now. Well, now I remember
what he was talking about 2 years ago. You shifted a little bit.
Oh, sorry.
Now we lost most of it.
Oh, that's okay. No, I was just saying that sometimes there are things that you learn in training, or you hear them in training, but they don't actually land a lot of the times till years later when you're teaching in a class and it comes up. So.
Oh, yeah. And you're like, oh, this.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah.
And honestly, my students are my greatest teachers, Like they're learning. Because each person is different and each person needs different things in each moment. So it's so rich, and that I never feel a sense of monotony with the danceability method, because every single class brings with it so many differences.
Yes. We were just also on a previous episode with Sally Davison. We were just talking about this, how like you can do action and response and it's never the same. It hasn't ever been the same action and response. It's every single time a new one.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. I was working on that just last week with a number of students, and the subtleties that can happen with that, the giving your full attention to witness someone's moving, it's so powerful, especially in this day and age with so much stimuli all the time and so much pulling. I don't know, speaking from myself, I often feel like my attention needs to be split between 4 or 5 different things at any moment.
Yes.
But doing an exercise like action and response in a class, and I get to give 100% of my focus just to my partner to really see them and to really be seen by them. And it's really powerful and really meaningful right now in this moment in time to give each other that attention. And I love to get to see it, get to witness my students giving themselves to each other in that way. It's,
we lost it. And that
it's really special.
What did you say? Students giving each other and for themselves.
I really love to get to witness, like, for example, doing action and response when you really watch your partner and wait for them. I think it's really meaningful and very powerful to give your attention 100% to someone else.
Oh, yeah.
Without feeling, without being pulled in all these different directions, to have that kind of presence that you need to have when you're really watching and waiting and moving. I find it to be a spiritual experience in many ways. Yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So.
It's like incredible how dance, and especially dance that is like a participant-led and created in a moment, can make like a space and time disappear.
Yes. Yes. And when you're improvising and you're really in that zone and it's just happening through you, I also think another thing about this moment in history, in our culture right now, that the improvisation as a technique is more needed than ever before, I feel, because of this sort of presence that we're talking about. Where when you're really like in that zone, and I don't know a more articulate way to say it, but when you're really, you're in a danceability class and you're improvising and you are present with the community that you're dancing with, and you're there and you're giving yourself to it and you're being witnessed, like, it's impossible to be, you know, you're not on social media. You're not thinking about the pace of it changes the pace. You're just for that period. You're just present in the moment, seen, being. I feel the need for it in my own life right now more than ever. And I think that it actually informs the rest of our lives meaningfully to be able to improvise. I mean, we're improvising all the time, right? You know, I think that when I improvise, I learn, the more that I develop my skills as an improviser, the more I learn how to improvise in other areas of my life and let it happen naturally, organically, in a way that doesn't involve as much fear.
Yeah, exactly. And there's like dance improvisation, and any method of dance improvisation, is a lot about making choices. And your choices are based on what you see. And then you have to critically and creatively think what you see and what kind of choices you're going to insert in it. And I think that's a huge part of everyday life. In a long term and in like a next minute. So I love that about dance improvisation and different methods of creating dances. That community and that choice making and what goes through your brain and thinking and your body while making the choices is just, it's really great process. I love it. It's very satisfying to me to watch and experience.
Yes. Where I'm in a dance class, I feel a sense of being connected to the rest of the world. And sometimes I've even said to my students, you know, right now there are other people in other countries all over the world doing this exact method.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's incredible, so to envision us all in our different countries dancing together at the same time, which inevitably is happening. You know, inevitably there are some of us dancing in the same moment together. That's an inspiring thought to me when that happens, when I think of it and when I think to share it.
Who knows how many danceability classes are happening at the same time in the world.
Right.
That's a very exciting idea.
Yeah. Yeah, we should do something someday where we're filming, we're all dancing together, right? We'll have screens in the studio.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, a festival.
Oh, like
an international festival.
Like they did with Thriller, we could all do action and response in one day, one time.
Yes. I love it.
Well, thank you so much again. It was so nice to talk to you, and thank you for doing it again.
Thank you. Oh, I appreciate it.